the, what is it, a rust or a...
No, it's a snow mold.
Snow mold.
Yes. Yeah, I'm studying the snow mold on winter wheat, and mainly just to find out what is the pathogen that caused the disease, and what is the effect of those pathogen on the winter wheat, and then in terms of survival and yield, and also talk about how to control them, either by the genetic means, that means the resistant variety, or by chemical control by using fungicide.
Now, are these wheat molds or whatever, or snow molds,
yes,
common in other parts of the country?
Yes, very. The snow mold actually is a generic term. Is it used to describe any kind of fungi that grow on a plant host and cause disease on the host, then under the snow, so under the cold condition. And then there are many, many different kind of snow molds. So what we found in Alaska is different from those snow molds that found in, say, Northwest or Midwest. And so even though you might read about snow molds on winter wheat, but they might talk about different mold.
So in other words, we have what is a problem in other parts of the country, but we have a different variety.
Yes, definitely.
Now, when you say you look at the various ways of treating it,
yes,
or preventing it,
yes,
rather
than, yes,
what are the approaches that you think that you're going to zero in on in your future work?
Well, I think for the you have a long range and a short range means of manage the disease. The long range, what I would like to see is to use resistant variety, because then it will be simpler and the more economical ways to control the disease, and also is less polluting the environment. However, from our study in the past 3 years, and we screen many, many different cultivars and then breeding lines, and we found absolutely none of the variety that's resistant or show any promising resistant to the snow mold. So, which just sort of forced us to resort to the short range means, that's to treat it with a chemical. And then we are quite successful in that part. And then we've been screening three different chemicals, and then one of them particular show a very good promise. Now, after 3 years study, this particular chemical, and if we treat it with the right concentration, we could increase the yield by tenfold. So if you want a number to be connected with it, then we could say the non-treated one, we get 9 bushels per acre, and then with the treated one, and then with the right dosage, and then we get 86, and then bushels per acre. And of course, the average U.S. Yield for winter for wheat is about 30 bushels per acre. So I think that that's just one indication that we can grow winter wheat in Alaska under the dryland farming practice. So many people in the past, they have doubts that we could ever grow this, you know, or get the decent yield, and now at least that's the part we proved.
Well, there's no wheat grown in Alaska of any significance now, is there?
No, there's none. I think it's very small acreage here and there, more on the experimental basis by farmers or by the researchers, but we don't have extensive acreage of winter wheat in Alaska. I think the reason is that in the past, it's the uncertainties in yield, because you never know whether that winter wheat will survive the winter or not. And of course, for many years, people's feeling are that it's because lack of winter hardiness in the crop, in the variety being used. Although the variety people used are usually quite hardy to begin with, but still they feel maybe being in Alaska is so cold in the wintertime, so those winter hardiness in the variety is not sufficient. However, after I look into the problem closely, and then I realized actually there are quite sufficient snow cover for those years that winter wheat yield was low. So that doesn't really make sense, because if you think a lack of winter hardiness, that means you don't have snow cover, you know, the exposed to the harshness in the winter time. However, if you do have a snow layer, for instance, like say 10 inches or foot, then it should suffice. And so then, of course, once I start looking into the snowmole problem, and I found all sorts of snowmoles, actually we found four different type of fungi that could cause snowmole disease on the winter wheat.
What about the Soviet Union? Don't they grow wheat this far north in there?
Yes, they do. And in Canada, too. And so many times the weather condition in Canada, Scandinavian country, and they all do grow winter wheat. And in the Scandinavian country, sometimes their winter wheat grow in a higher latitude than we are in around Fairbanks area. So there's no question about whether we can grow it or not. I think the question's how we're going to grow it, and what is the limiting factor prevent us from growing it. And once we sort those problems out, then I have no doubt we could have a good winter wheat industry.
Oh, I can see that. Sounds like you've made a major breakthrough. You describe it as that?
Well, I'm pretty happy about our result. I think I would like to see a large acreage of winter wheat growing in Alaska. I think with the proper cultivars, and then with our understanding of the environmental condition where we grow those crop, then we can really make I think we could succeed. And then, of course, the nice thing about winter wheat is it will be a nice alternate crop with barley. So I do not mean that we will, abandon barley. I think we should keep both of them. But then the current practice, we just grow barley after barley. From the plant pathologist's point of view, it's a bad practice, because then the disease start to accumulate, and eventually you might face the crisis in the future. However, if we could say grow barley for several years and then grow winter wheat for several years, and you alternate, and then you can keep the disease level down for both crops, and then that would be much better for everybody. And then also winter wheat, because it grow, you plant it in the summer, late summer, you harvest it in late summer, so it's much easier. So you will be less subject to the weather influence. And then, of course, with the alternate in growing barley and the winter wheat, then you can, there will be more efficient use of farmers' time and also farmers' equipment. So right now, people just grow barley and everybody use the same equipment at the same time. So it's the overhead is just too much.
Let me ask you, I've got two questions.
Yeah.
Together. One, pretend like you're a farmer. What practice would you, start with? If you were a farmer and were going to grow winter wheat, one, there's two parts of this. One, would you gamble in winter wheat now? And two, if you were, what would you do?
Well, if I were a farmer, I really don't know whether I have winter wheat, that snowmole problem or not. So what I'll do first is I will, and also I don't know the land. If I have no idea about what how much snow cover I'm going to get on my land, then I'll just grow a very small acreage the first year, and then I will see how much snow cover is there accumulated in the winter, and in the spring I will look at those bare spots and then get experts to come and identify, see if it's a snowmole. And if both of the answer is affirmative, then the next year I will grow a larger acreage and now spray this chemical and to control the snowmole, and then accumulate, have enough snow cover so I know my crop will survive. So I think that I certainly wouldn't say go in and then plant hundreds and hundreds acres in the first year. But we SNOMO study, SNOMO research, even though we have done that for 3 years, it's still it's a beginning to probe this into a major problem. And so we, for one thing, we really have no idea the distribution of the SNOMO in this in Alaska soil. We know it's there, it's indigenous, so it's present in the soil, even though we have never plant any crops there. But it is found on the native grasses, grassland and all that. So if it's a land that's been planted before, so it's more likely you have it in your soil. Of course, and the longer you grow winter wheat, and then the more severe the problem's going to be. Yeah.
Now, on a year like this year, when we have such a small amount of
snow, mm-hmm.
we've also had mild.
Very mild, yes.
What would this do to the winter wheat? They skip the snowball.
Yeah. Well, for winter wheat, I think it's very good. It's not very cold, and it's, even though it have very thin layers of snow, but that's suffice, because as long as there's some snow cover, so it will not get into, you know, subject to the elements, and then the winter wheat it just do very well. Yeah, for instance, in many states like Utah, and they have snow, but then it melts very quickly, and then they have really a good winter wheat crop there. So you winter wheat, you do not always need it to be covered by snow, but it does. The snow, only snow will provide protection when you're in a harsher environment like North Dakota and Alaska and other places. Yes. Yeah.
I've jumped around on a variety of questions. Is there anything I did not ask you that I should have asked?
No, I think fairly, you know, covered.
I'd like to ask a couple more questions.
Sure.
I'm trying to give you a chance from time to
time. Yeah.
Yeah. You think of something, because I know I think of questions in general.
Yeah.
You've identified four snow walls.
Yes.
Do the snow walls interact where the one, can one by itself wipe out a crop, or do you need them together, or why?
Well, usually you find one of them, well, among those four, I should say, two of them are most prominent, the most common, and most cause most damage on the winter wheat. And then the other two are less, in a lesser degree. And then usually you find just one fungi will wipe out, one fungus will wipe out the crop. And then, but many times we found two on the same plant. Of course, that plant has no chance at all. So they do interact, but that's the area we're studying. We want to know whether they have any competition or inhibition among them, those four different fungi. But then that, for the farmer, doesn't matter, you know, if they want to grow a crop, but one just as bad as the other one.
Want to finish you off like the other.
That's right.
I'm going to reveal my ignorance about wheat farming right now. But today I did a piece on Carol Lewis and her cover. It sounds like that winter wheat would provide a year-round ground cover.
Yes.
Oh,
yes, that's very good, very true. Because, see, you plant the crop in mid-July, you harvest about that time. So that will give you a year-round ground coverage. So us in terms of soil conservation, that would be a good way to go. And then you don't till, well, of course, for winter wheat, the pressure is not there when you have to plant, like you have to plant in barley, that you only have about a week or 2 weeks in the early spring to plant the crop, otherwise you're going to miss the season. For winter wheat, we found that you can start planting, say, mid-July, and then, well, until as late as August, mid-August. But of course, if you drag your feet and any later than that, you're going to subject your winter wheat to SNOMO damage, because then they are too young and tender. They have not enough nutrients base to sustain their growth and to become resistant to the disease. So so you will expect some yield loss if you drag your feet too much. But then, you know, compared to what 3 and 4 weeks compared to what 2 weeks in barley, that's quite a difference. Yeah. And the same in harvesting. we start harvesting our crop, say, first week of August, so then you can have the whole August to harvest the crop and then, you know, do many other things.
Also, it would appear to my untrained eye that the person who is, could say, plant winter wheat, and in May they would know that their crop is or isn't going to make.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Rip it up and put in barley.
Yes. Yes, that will be a distinct advantage. If they will know snow melt, you know, by spring breakup, they know immediately whether they have a crop or not, because winter wheat if they did not survive the winter, you know, because the snow melt, then they will see the evidence of snow melt on the crop and of. Those they're like sort of like a cobweb, sometimes like cobweb things covered on the winter wheat, and you see them on the ground lawn too. They cause the similar disease on grasses, and then also some of the snow mold, they do not form this extensive cobwebs, but then your plants just wilted, just turn yellow and die. So then that's, if you can evaluate, see how many percent of your field is destroyed by snow molds, and then if you think it's not worthwhile saving it, then you just till it over and then plant something else.
Sounds like.
Yeah.
But it also, the other side of it, a rough arithmetic, if the
mm-hmm.
farmer has said he's had 3 years of wheat,
mm-hmm.
for him to switch to barley 1 year, he's going to have a fallow year in between.
So yes, yes, that will be so, yeah. Yeah.
Anything else that you'd like to add?
When people worry about the winter hardiness, you know, they are the winter hardiness and our amount of snow being accumulated in the soil, then those problems they can be controlled or can be manipulated by different cultural practice. For instance, if you in an area it's very windy and then usually the snow cover is being blown away, and then in those area you probably say you leave some stubble on the ground, and then that will trap the snow or put up snow fence. Or you can use a furrow, plant your crops in a furrow instead of a flat ground. And then those little dent in the ground that will cause the snow to accumulate there, so will provide some part of protection for your crop. So then that's not, but of course then, once you get a snow cover, then you have to worry about a snow mold. So from what I can see is that snow mold control is the bottleneck of winter wheat growing in Alaska, because the other, winter hardiness, you can remedy it by different cultural practice.
One last question.
Mm.
Do we have any, at the experiment station, do we have any wheat planted for this winter for further study?
Yes, for the snow mold study, yes. It's continuous study, and then we've just finished one experiment that's run for 3 years. So this, after that finished, and this fall, then we started another experiment. And the first experiment is the one that we use to, we evaluate the chemicals, and we find out which chemicals give us the best control, and then we know approximately the dosage too. We try the different dosage and then we know which one give us the best control. But then so now we start a second, and then because the first set we have to spray after the crop is up. And so that means you have two-step control. You grow the crop first, and then you spray it. And so now we're trying to make it into one step. Say we treat the seeds, or we treat the soil when we are planting the seeds. So if we, and then we try to evaluate, and then the dosage and also the timing. So if we can combine this into one step, so it will be so much easier for and so much more economical for the farmers to do it. So then that will be another 3-year study. We just started this year. So it's a continual process. And of course, in the laboratory, and then we study the snowmole itself and what temperature is best for its growth and what other growth requirement it needs. And also we study how the snowmole is causing disease on the plants, and how long does the plant how long does it take to make the plant get sick, and those very basic questions. And then those questions, of course, we eventually can utilize this knowledge and then into the breeding prospect of resistant variety, because then we know what type of wheat we will need it to become resistant to this disease. But that's a very, very long process. Yeah. Oh, many. I would say if we're lucky, we get one in 10 years.